Welcome to Changing Light Bulbs, the podcast that's dedicated to innovation and transformation in all of their forms.
Today, I have a very special guest, the founder and creator of the ongoing history of new music, Alan Cross. Admittedly, he's been a hero of mine for a very long time, and I really appreciate his time to tell his story about managing the change that he faced within his career. What I find very interesting is his understanding that change is often bigger than ourselves and that we just have to move on with it and move forward in a positive way. I hope you enjoy the episode. Please take a listen. Hey, Alan, thanks so much for taking the time to come onto our podcast today. I'm not sure if you're aware of it, but you're actually the one who had an incredible change on my life by introducing me to Billy Bragg.
Well, I'll tell you what happened is that I came to the edge, CFNY, in 1986. It was October 3rd of 1986 when I arrived. And I came from Winnipeg. And Winnipeg, you know, God bless the city and the province of Manitoba. For them, rock kind of achieved perfection in about 1977. And when I came here, I realized immediately that there was huge gaps in my musical education. There was all this music the radio station was playing that I had no idea existed. And for the first weeks, you know, there were 10,000 records in the library, and you were expected to learn everything that you possibly could about each of those 10,000 records. Yeah. And these were 10,000 albums, not singles, but 10,000 albums.
Yeah.
And that was around the time Billy Bragg released the Talking to the Tax Man About Poetry album. And, you know, first of all, I looked at this with skepticism.
Right.
Okay, so this guy with an accent, with no band, who is going to entertain me with his troubadoury songs.
Yeah, right.
But I still believe to this day that the greatest opening lines of any song I have ever heard in my life is for Levi Stubbs' Tears.
Yeah.
Because that line, with the money from the accident, she bought herself a mobile home.
Yes.
That line is loaded with so much imagery in so few words.
Yeah.
That I honestly remember listening to it for the first time. So those chiming guitar chords come in, and then he starts strumming away, and then with the money from the accident, she bought herself a mobile home. I said, holy crap, where is this going? I can't wait to hear it.
Yeah.
And that was that one particular song, and I remember very, very clearly, was a big part of that initial shock at the realizing that there was all this music that I had never known existed. And I realized too that, okay, this is where I want to be.
Interesting. Well, you know what? It totally changed my life too when you played it for the first time, I believe on a Sunday morning. And it was crazy.
Mm-hmm.
And to this day now, I still volunteer with Youth at Risk, specifically because he opened my eyes to the disparity of society.
And at that time, you know, Billy was very much a traveling musician. He would come play places like the Alma Combo. It would be him, a guitar, and an amp. And he would show up at the radio station, because that's what everybody did back in those days. They would always drop in. And, you know, there'd be one day going to work, and, you know, you'd be sitting in the lobby talking to the receptionist, and here's Billy with his Fender Twin, you know, coming in. Hey, mate. Hi, Billy. You gonna come in? Yeah, I'll sit up and play a little bit.
Yeah. That's fantastic. Well, thank you. So that was who I was. That's who influenced me. Who influenced you? What changed your life?
Well, it goes back to when my sixth birthday, my grandmother, for whatever reason, gave me a transistor radio. Don't know why. Nobody asked her to give me one. My parents never suggested it. I certainly didn't ask for it. But I was growing up in a small town outside of Winnipeg where there were three TV channels, one of which was in French. And the only radio I'd ever been exposed to was whatever mom and dad were listening to in the car or on the kitchen table. Then this radio comes into my life, and I realize that there's more than one radio station. And then not only that, I realize there's more than one city where radio stations exist. And in the wintertime, there's something called atmospheric skip, ionospheric skip. And this layer of the atmosphere gets very, very thick when it's cold at night. And the colder, the thicker this mirror. And what happens is AM radio signals get reflected from stations many, many hundreds of miles away. So I would sit in my bedroom listening to radio stations from Minneapolis and Chicago and Denver and Cincinnati and Louisville, Kentucky, and sometimes all the way from Mexico. And I was absolutely entranced by it.
Yeah.
Like, where are all these voices coming from? What is all this music about? Who are these people that are getting to do the talking? All this entertainment and information coming from somewhere. I would like to be part of that.
Right.
So I became an avid radio listener at first. And I thought, I didn't really think that I had, you know, what it took to be a radio person, because that was an exalted sort of job. Although I would force my dad to, you know, take me to radio stations so I can get a tour. Whenever there was somebody doing a remote at a furniture store, I'd say, Dad, they're doing a remote. Can we go watch them do the remote?
Yeah.
So we would do that. And I got better and better radios as time went on. And then somewhere around my 12th birthday, we went to my uncle's place to pick up a new puppy. And my uncle was working for the Manitoba Telephone System, but he was moonlighting servicing jukeboxes. And his job would be to go in this circuit and swap out all the old records for all the new records. And by the time the old records were old, they were pretty worn out.
Right.
And there was nothing to do with them except throw them away. Except this day where he said, you know, here's all the records that I got out of the jukeboxes, do you want them? And those records, those 45s, became the basis of my music collection. And the reason they were so important was because I was one of those guys who was the brown nosy good kid in school.
Right.
Very unpopular. And if you're growing up on the prairies and you're not a good hockey player and you're good in school, then you are doomed. You are a social pariah. So I needed to find some way to attract a modicum of coolness.
Right.
And the only way that I could figure that out was to be the music guy.
Yeah.
So from that point on, I was the one that people learned to come to when it came to music and whatever stuff was on the radio. So there's no one person or thing that influenced me, just a confluence of events that had me become wrapped up in radio and music.
That's actually a really cool journey. One of the things that I noticed about you and your journey and a big change in that was when you developed the ongoing history of new music. Maybe you could tell me a little bit about that.
Well, I didn't want to do it. What happened was that CFNY had gone through a series of management changes. They finally settled on a team, and there was real concern that the station just had too much baggage. It was too damaged. It was just irreparable.
Right.
So why don't we just wipe the slate clean and turn it into a country station?
Oh, interesting. Okay.
This would be 1992.
Wow.
And then they did some market research and they realized that, wait a second, there's this new kind of music that seems to be related to what the station was doing. And bands like Pearl Jam and Nirvana and Alice in Chains and Soundgarden and the Red Hot Chili Peppers, this seems to be something happening. So I tell you what, we're not going to change the station to country. We're going to keep it as a modern rock station. We're going to change the name of the radio station to The Edge, because that was the style at the time. But in order to make sure that everybody who is going to flock to this radio station to educate all the new listeners that we were supposed to be going to, that we were going to get, we needed someone to put all this music into context.
Right.
So they looked around and they found exactly one person on staff with a history degree, me, and they said, this is what you're going to do. You're going to do a one-hour program on Sunday nights at 7 o'clock. It is going to be called The Ongoing History of New Music. That's a terrible name. Yeah. No, that doesn't matter. That's what it's going to be called. And instead of working Monday to Friday from 2 until 6, you were going to spend Wednesday, Thursday, Friday working on this radio show, and then you're going to work on the radio Saturday and Sunday mornings from 6 a.m. to noon.
Right.
I don't want to do that. I mean, I had a great gig, Monday to Friday, 2 to 6. Are you kidding me?
Said, yeah.
Yeah. Yeah, okay, well, you don't have to do this, but if you don't, well, we'll find some severance money for you and pay you off, and you can go find another job somewhere else. So I had just gotten married. I just built my first house. There was really not much choice. So yeah, I thought, okay, I got to make some lemonade out of this. And management paid attention for exactly one show, the first show I did. And then they left me alone. So today, as we sit here, I was working on episode number 874.
Oh my.
So it has kind of taken on a life of its own. The person who made my life hell by severing me, hiring me back as a contract employee, and taking away my sweet 2 to 6 gig is dead. Other people that are responsible for the misery that I was put through are out of the business. Yet I am still here.
That's fantastic.
Yeah, it's just an example of how life can be very, very, very strange, where you think it's all coming to an end when it's really just the beginning.
Just the beginning. Yeah, it is certainly serendipitous, right?
Yes.
Absolutely. So we're here to talk about change. And so what I was hoping to chat with you about is all the changes that have happened in the radio and music industry over the last number of years. So tell me about kind of where the industry is today and how did it get here?
Well, we got to go all the way back to the beginning. When I first started, we were playing vinyl records.
Yeah.
All the commercials were on tape cartridges called carts. Everything was live.
Okay.
We did have something, you know, if there was nobody available to do the night show,
yeah,
well, then you just shut the radio station down.
Wow.
There were no computers whatsoever. When we would select our music, we would use something called a card catalog, which was basically recipe cards. You'd look at whatever was on the front of the, whatever song came up on the recipe card. You'd play that song and put that card to the back of the pile. And that's how you would rotate songs through. You had to pull all your records and file all your records and pull all your commercials and file all your commercials. You got most of your communication through the request line, which was always, always, always ringing. And in the era before the internet, radio was the closest thing that you got to instant, real-time information,
right,
of anything that was happening. For example, you know, we can go back to October, for example, we can go back to April 8th, 1994, the day Kurt Cobain dies.
Right.
The only way to find out what was going on was to listen to the radio.
Right.
Because there was no internet, there was no social media, there was no email, there was nothing like that.
Yeah.
There was just the people at the radio station working the phones, working the wire services. So that's a big change. Technologically, it's a huge change.
Yeah.
In terms of social change, I mean, back when I started, you had radio, you had television, you had a cinema at the end of the street with maybe, I don't know, 3-4 screens.
Yeah.
You might, depending on where you were, have a bookstore.
Yeah.
And that was it. Those were your entertainment options. And, you know, if you missed something on TV, well, there was no recap online. They didn't rerun the show later in the week.
Yeah, yeah.
Everything was consumed as it was broadcast. And radio had a very big piece of the pie. We worked in conjunction with the record labels and the record stores, and we were able to, radio was a major cultural gatekeeper,
right,
of music. Now it's completely flipped on its head. Everything is customizable. Everything is personalizable. Information travels at the speed of light on all levels. And although radio continues to be very powerful, very profitable, and very popular, it has morphed into a different role than that thing. It was like radio was the original social media.
Right,
because that's what glued everybody together. The radio, the guy on the radio, the woman on the radio, and the music that they played and the news that they told. That was social media. That's where you got everything from. And we have to share that now with many, many other sources.
And do you think the thought leaders at that time saw it coming?
No. No idea. You have to understand that when the internet first really started breaking through, it was 1995.
Yeah.
And being an alternative station, you know, we were on the cutting edge of everything. We were early adopters and adopters, and we were pushing, you know, like, you know, we should have a gopher site. He says, no. What you want is you want a website. It's like, what's that? Well, and we finally convinced management that we should get into this whole thing. And, you know, this is before Internet Explorer. This is before Google. This is before anything. Really primitive stuff.
Yeah, yeah.
And we thought that, yeah, this is going to be an adjunct to what we're doing, and it's never going to replace us.
Right.
We're going to take our stuff, put it on online, whatever that meant, on the information superhighway, and that was going to be this other thing that we were going to be able to command
right.
and use and exploit. Nobody saw that the internet would become what it is today, which is everything.
Do you think anybody could have seen it at that time?
No, I think there were a few visionaries that saw that, okay, this interconnectedness of everything is going to happen, but I don't think anyone foresaw the kinds of technologies that would arise as a result. Like, in 1995, 96, if you wanted to chat with people online, you went to a bulletin board.
Yeah, yeah.
Or you had an IRC channel.
Yeah.
You know, I remember email for the first time, which was, you know, supposedly you ration it very carefully because, you know, it's so new and not everybody has access to email. My first real forays online was my CompuServe account when, you know, I had all the chat rooms and all the rest of it. And I would get up after 11 o'clock and I would dial into a node in Columbus, Ohio.
Yeah.
Just to you know, connect, because there was no node in Canada.
Yeah.
But then modems got faster, and Mosaic browser came along, and then Internet Explorer came and ate Mosaic's lunch, and then Google, and then everything else after that.
Yeah, yeah.
We had no idea that things were there. I mean, you have to understand that you know, a streaming player like RealPlayer, back in the late 90s, audio was really, really, really choppy. It buffered all the time. Nobody saw that it was actually going to, you know, interfere with radio because of limited bandwidth. I remember watching a Paul McCartney concert. It was supposed to be this is late 90s sometime. And Paul McCartney, I think he was playing the old Cavern Club.
Yeah.
And they were using a RealPlayer interface. And the video screen, the video display, was about the size of a large postage stamp. Because that's all the bandwidth, and that's all the resolution that they could muster.
Yeah, yeah.
So you think about where we are today
versus,
we had no idea.
Where do you think the radio industry and the music industry is today? Are they healthy? Are they?
Well, they are healthy. I mean, radio, again, popular, powerful, profitable. Not as profitable as it once was, but it continues to do very well. I mean, 90% of the Canadian population listens to the radio every week, so that's pretty healthy. It's free.
Yeah.
It's in cars. It's doing much better than a lot of, you know, early adopter techno people will tell you. It does have to change, though, because we are still using technology, analog technology, that is over 100 years old.
Yeah.
It is non-customizable by the end user. It is not two-way, and it is not on-demand, which is what everybody is expecting. However, radio, because of its continuing success, changing it's difficult because it's kind of like asking a pilot to change the wings on an airplane at 38,000 feet.
Yeah.
So it's going to be slow incremental change. And there were a number of times over the past 20 years where the industry as a whole went into trying to adopt to new technologies, and we made some terrible blunders, went down some wrong alleys, a lot of radio stations at the beginning, for example, thought that what they wanted to do is build their platforms, like bespoke platforms.
Yeah, yeah.
Instead of using off the shelf stuff.
Right, right, right.
So nobody in their right mind is going to build a website without a WordPress template. I mean, yeah. Why would you?
Right.
You know, unless you're working for a bank or you need some heavy enterprise stuff, why would you? But we were building our own stuff. And so by the time we rolled it out, it was 6 or 9 months out of date.
Yeah.
And we'd have to start all over again. So we're waiting to see how things shake out. Meanwhile, there are other things that we have to wait and see what happens. Like, well, what's going to happen with self-driving cars? What's going to happen with 5G?
Right.
5G is going to be another game changer. And again, you know, when you have instant internet communication with zero latency,
yeah,
what kinds of technologies are going to erupt out of that? We have no idea.
Absolutely.
So we're watching. We're trying to be very cautious because it costs money and jobs and all the rest of it. But we are watching.
Where do you think it's going to go? Any ideas?
Well, AM and FM is going to disappear, and it'll be some sort of IP delivery.
Okay.
That's what it's going to be. And how that IP delivery happens, I don't know. For example, you know, look at satellite radio.
Yeah, yeah.
Satellite radio, and they would love to be able to shoot down the satellites because they're very expensive to maintain. And they still have like technical issues with things like bandwidth and tall buildings and all the rest of it. If you can deliver something instantaneously through internet protocol, then you're into a different situation entirely, because then it becomes two-way, then it becomes on-demand, then it becomes customizable. What's the interface going to look like?
Yeah.
I mean, we can go back to the early days of satellite radio. The interfaces were terrible.
Right.
Just terrible. But once the manufacturers, the automobile manufacturers, started figuring out exactly how to display satellite radio information on the dashboard, well then, all of a sudden, we have something to talk about. So that's one thing that we're going to have to go through.
Yeah. Do you think the companies are ready for this? Do you think the executives are on board?
Oh, they're definitely on board, because again, this is a huge multi-billion-dollar business with a huge amount of infrastructure.
Yeah, yeah.
It's not going to go away, and they're certainly not going to cede their position to some upstart. There is the chance that some sort of weird, you know, startup company will come and change everything, but we're still limited by the laws of physics and the availability of bandwidth, of spectrum.
Right.
So it's not like you can build something from scratch over here, which has nothing to do with everything that's already in use.
So in all that time, you've had a hell of experience in this industry. What was the biggest thing you learned about change and transformation?
Just, you got to go with it. Do not coast, and do not object to change. I mean, you can look at it with a certain amount of skepticism and care, but ultimately you cannot be Luddite about it. You just gotta go with it. I remember, for example, when we first moved from playing records and CDs to a hard drive playback system.
Yeah.
I hated it.
Yeah.
And the reason I hated it was because there was something, it took away the physical performance of being on the air.
Right.
So you were always doing something, moving something, changing something every 3 to 5 minutes.
Yeah.
In the case of commercials, what you would do, you know, the 30-second commercial, you were hitting a button every 30 seconds because the next commercial had to come up. So all that stuff, it was, again, really physical, and you were immersed in the performance, like the technical performance of a radio broadcast. When we moved to the digital playback system, well, the computer covered everything.
Yeah.
And you just had to monitor a little bit. And the computer playback systems have become so sophisticated and so reliable now that, well, put it this way. Back in the day when we were just starting out, the management says, we don't want you surfing the net. We don't want you doing email.
Yeah.
We want you paying attention to your radio broadcast, and we want you answering the request lines. All that other stuff can wait. Now, it's like, okay, the computer will take care of all that. post this, follow up Facebook, comments on Twitter, check and see what texts are coming in. You got to do this post for the website. Yeah. You know, on and on, and then you'll get a voice track something for something else, and you're doing all this while you're on the air. Now, back in the old days, you could never do that because, again, you had 5-minute deadlines at most because the record ran out.
Yeah, yeah.
When you had to talk or you had to mix a record or whatever it was. Not anymore. So it's completely flipped on its head. The radio will take care of itself. You got to do all this other stuff rather than you got to take care of the radio and this other stuff, take care of it later.
So almost wrapped up here. I want to come back to two things you said. Ongoing history of new music.
Mm-hmm.
And switching from hard drives.
Yeah.
Both times you said you didn't like doing it and you didn't want to change.
Yeah.
How did you get over that? How did you come to grips with it?
Okay, you know what? Deal with it.
Yeah.
It's bigger than you. The ongoing history stuff is like, again, it was either do this or find another line of work.
Yeah.
And I never wanted to do, still don't want to do anything else.
Yeah.
And the idea of not being on the radio after, at that point, would have been a decade, I just couldn't imagine it. So I was like, okay, well, we have to figure out how to make this work. For the hard drive stuff, it was just, it is what it is.
Yeah.
And you know, there were several of us that insisted that, okay, well, yes, we could load the music file into the computer and let it run, or we could, you know, go through the hassle of pulling out our CDs, loading the CDs, playing the CDs, mixing the CDs, filing the CDs. After a while, just like, whatever, let the machine do it.
It's just easier.
It's just easier.
Yeah, yeah.
But what's for example, one thing I do miss is that, again, we go back to this physical performance of radio. When I got here, one of the things that we were judged by, especially when it came to your boss, was how well you mixed two records together.
Okay.
How, you know, what kind of segues you created, because that was all part of the performance, right?
Right, right.
Computers don't do that. Computers just like one song ends, another song begins, and there's none of this really fancy sort of, you know, slip cueing and the stuff that we used to do. I wish I had some audio from a well executed CFNY announcer shift from 88 or 89, and the difference in how it would sound sonically, because of the segues, would be dramatic.
Yeah, I can imagine. So, last question: when I hear you say the word transformation, what do you think?
Transformation. I see slow, steady, incremental progress, and I will use the term progress because I'm an optimistic person at heart, and I think that as things transform, they will inevitably, after all the bumps, transform into something better than what we have now.
Right.
But, you know, again, things change, attitudes change, sometimes for the better, sometimes for the worse, but nothing stays the same, and if anybody expects it to stay the same, you're in for a terrible disappointment.
Absolutely. Well, with that, that's a perfect note to end on. So thank you so much for your time. I really appreciate it.
You're welcome.
This concludes our episode for today. I hope you enjoyed it. For more information on the work that I do around innovation and transformation, please check out my website at www.changinglightbulbs.com. And for more information on our amazing sponsor, Delta Oversee, the software company that's dedicated to enabling positive, sustainable change and transformations for organizations, please check out their website at www.deltaoversee.info or give them a shout at 647-513-3582. Don't forget to mention that you heard about us on this podcast. Thanks again, and never forget to continually adapt and transform for tomorrow's reality.